All right, let's get started. So for this session, we will be talking about cloud integration. My name is Yves Goeleven. 15 years ago, I graduated from this very school. So you can see there is still a career after school for you guys. Standing in front of the teacher, yeah, for once. Not sure if there are teachers in the room, by the way. But I'm specialized since then in enterprise applications. I've been working for various big consulting companies in Belgium and have been doing projects for most of the big companies in this country. And I'm specialized since a couple of years in cloud computing, so in Microsoft Azure. I've been Azure MVP for 5 years now. I run my own online service called Message Handler, also running on Azure. And today I wanted to show you how you can combine these cloud-based services with your WVP apps to show how you can get to a connected or to a connected experience. So it's no secret that mobile phones and tablets and other devices, smart devices, have been entering our world or our ecosystem. But if we use these things, then it's very often device-centered. So imagine that I take a picture with my smartphone and I wanted to show this picture to you, then I very often have to give you my smartphone, which is stupid, yes. And also very uncomfortable, because everything on this smartphone is mine, and if I give it to you, you would be able to actually have a look at it and maybe discover things that I don't like you to discover. So we want to have a different experience. As a user, we would like to be central to this experience. We don't want our device to be central, but we want to be at the center of this experience. So in the same scenario where I take my picture, I would like to actually transpose my picture on another device, which makes more sense. Like in this case, for example, I would like to transport it over on the big screen. Or maybe if you're at home, you want to transport it over to the television or to some other device that makes sense at that point in time. Yeah. So that's what we would really like. Now, Windows 10, in essence, is giving us all of the tools needed to go from this device-centered experience towards this user-centered experience. And that's what we are going to do in this session. We're going to show you what you need to do, how you can set it up, how you can leverage cloud, of course, to make sure that information transfers between applications or instances of applications. And as well, look at how you can integrate user authentication so that you can identify who the user is and also make sure that that gets handled. As well as also a little bit of offline experience, if we have the time. The lab that we are going through in this session will be way too big to cover in an hour, so you're not going to do everything. But based on the desire to actually exchange information between applications, for pictures we could simply use something like OneDrive, right? But if you want to go for a bigger experience, for a better experience, then you need something more sophisticated. And that the service that exists in the Azure platform, which has been specifically designed for this use case, is called App Service. App Service is a collection of other services which have all been built on something called Web Apps. Web Apps is a hosting infrastructure which was initially designed for websites. It was also initially called Azure Websites. But you can host just about any application on there as long as it communicates with HTTP. So if you put a web API on there, or if you put a website on there, or you put some kind of workflow application on there, as long as it talks HTTP, it's fine for web apps. So that's why they decided to rebrand it from Websites to Web Apps. The foundation of this service is the web apps infrastructure, but on top of that, we have specializations for specific use cases. The one that is most interesting today is going to be mobile apps. So mobile apps is an extension on top of web apps with additional services that are useful within a mobile application development environment. And on the other hand, we also have something called API apps. This is specifically designed to host web APIs or web services, so you like, for integration purposes. And then we have something called logic apps, which is a layer on top of API apps that allows you to integrate these API calls into a business logic workflow, usually. So imagine if an invoice comes in or an email comes in with a certain type of text in, then you want to notify your boss or somebody. This kind of logic, that's what logic apps is used for. Typically on top of those API apps, typically on top of SaaS integrations. We will focus today solely on mobile apps. You can take your time and to discover the other parts as well. Okay, so mobile apps itself also consists of multiple parts. On the client side of things, there is an SDK for every mobile platform, or all of the major mobile platforms out there, so iOS, Android, and Windows, as well as SDK support for various cross-platform development environments, such as Xamarin, such as PhoneGap. So it makes it very easy to develop mobile applications with this on all of the three major platforms. What you also see is on the server side of things, these SDKs, they talk to services in the cloud through a REST API. You have different kinds of services over there that are explicitly designed for mobile. So one is to give you access to data. So these are data connectors for example, Azure Table Storage or SQL Server or MongoDB. So it allows you to shift data from the cloud to your device and back. Another big part is user authentication. So we have identity providers for the major social networks like Facebook, Google, Twitter, Live, Microsoft Live, as well as interesting for enterprises, especially Active Directory. We will, during the lab, we will be working with Active Directory in the cloud. And then we also have this push notification service, which is very interesting. It allows you to send push notifications from your backend applications to any of the major phone native push notification services. So it allows you to send push notifications to iPhone, or iPad, to Android, to Windows, all with the same interface from your backend. So it's very easy to send push notifications to all of your potential users. And a couple of extra parts. This is interesting, being offline sync. So devices are not always connected. In certain scenarios, you're usually connected and occasionally not. And in other scenarios, you're usually not connected, but you occasionally are. Both of these scenarios are covered by a service and an SDK part called Sync, which allows you in a very easy way to build this offline support into your application. The hands-on lab that you got includes a section on this specifically, but because it is so lengthy, we will not be able to fit it into the 1 hour time frame. So this is something that I hope you could do at home. And then finally, there's also a large set of existing backend code to integrate with a lot of existing SaaS services. So you can just pick these parts from the Azure Marketplace, put them in your app, your web app host, and then you can start using them from within your application. So it's a large set of additional services on top of this hosting environment that allows you to quickly build mobile applications. So a little bit deeper into this offline sync part. So the offline sync feature of mobile services allows you, as I said, to do the primarily connected scenario as well as the occasionally connected scenario. It works with various data sources, so you're not limited to just SQL or limited to just Azure resources. You could also use Salesforce, for example, as a backend. It's obviously cross-platform because the SDK of mobile service itself is cross-platform. And it's very flexible. You can extend it. We will show that in the first part of the lab. you can actually control what the data structure, etc. is. You can actually control everything. So how does this thing work? Well, usually if you've ever worked with a database, then you know that you perform operations on a database like insert, updates, and deletes, right? If you are connected with that database, you just send the insert statement over or the delete statement over, and then the operation executes on the server, you get a response back. And you know everything is fine and dandy, state is consistent. Now, if you're offline, then this data sync option will apply the insert on the data that you have locally, your local cache of a table. It will apply the insert there, and if you are offline, it will put the insert statement in a queue. So it will put it in a waiting slot where that it can wait until the phone comes back online again. Whenever that happens, and your phone gets a new connection, then it will automatically, not automatically, but you can instruct it to push all of the instructions that have been piled up in that queue, push it to the server, and it will, at that point, take care for you of conflicts for you, because it could be that multiple users have been in this offline scenario at the same time, locally working on the same data, and then you could get conflicts. Like, maybe I changed the name to person one, and my colleague changed the name to person two, and we would have a conflict. And it will resolve this type of conflict for you based on a set of rules. So that's how it works. It creates a local queue of the operations instead of sending them out immediately and handle the conflicts that are a result of basically being a bit late in the execution. All right, so that's all that I have as for slides. The rest of the presentation will be hands-on lab. There are three big parts of this hands-on lab, and in total, it will not fit in a one-hour time slot. I think we have something like 50 minutes left, so it will not even fit in there as well. So we decided to only do the first part and the second part, and then leave the third part, the sync, on you. In the first part, what we are going to do is we are going to create our own web app or our own mobile service application that can serve as a backend. It's basically just a CRUD application. I have still an hour, no? Do I have more time than the rest?
That's cool. Yes, I stopped especially earlier to be able to give you.
Good. But it's honestly, it took me 2 hours to complete the entire lab, so it's not going to fit anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Time boxing.
But in the first part of this lab, we are going to create a service. We're going to look at the most important parts. And we're going to run that service locally, consume it from a mobile application, both hosted on the desktop as well as hosted in the phone emulator. Okay, that's the first part. In the second part, we will switch over from a local hosted application to a cloud hosted application that has been provided by Microsoft. But this one requires authentication. So we are going to integrate authentication into our universal app and show you how all of that works. We will log on with the credentials from Active Directory and as well learn how we can remember those credentials so that you don't have to log in all the time. And then the final part, if we ever get to that, is synchronization between an offline client and this remote service by Microsoft. So let me switch to my desktop. I'm going to kill PowerPoint. We don't need that anymore. Kill it with fires. I think we have some PowerPoint fans in the room. Yeah? Okay, so let's take the lab. As you can see, it's 32 pages long, so it's quite long. Let's go to the first part. I assume you all have Visual Studio 2015 and Windows 10 on your machine. Does everybody have the phone emulator or not? Because this is separate install. Who doesn't have the phone emulator?
A couple of them.
Or it doesn't work, whatever. You can't use it. It's that's basically the same thing as not having it, right? So in the first exercise, we are going to set up a mobile service. if you follow the lab, you will notice that the first part is creating an effective mobile service in Azure. I'm going to show you where it's done and what the end result is going to be. But we're not going to wait the 10 minutes for the actual provisioning to happen. Right? So this is also a little bit boring part if you have to do it in demos. But if you go to the portal, so I can highlight it for you, I hope. I don't know if it's visible. But the URI is called portal.azure.com. If you have an Azure subscription, then you can log into this thing and start working in it. One of the things that you can create, one of the services that you can create, is called a mobile service. And you can do this by clicking the plus button on the left, and then search in the list. Usually it's beneath web mobile, and then you see this orange dot here, which is called mobile app. If you click that, you get a pane where you can fill in certain details, including the name of your web app, the subscription where you want to put it, the location where you want to put it. In this case, I put it in West Europe, and as well some naming. So I'm not going to do this effectively, but if you just type in a name here and you push create, then you will get a new mobile application. And I will show you what the end result is. Where are all my resources? Well, maybe I should go back to the... So it should also appear on your dashboard. You see this tile over here on this side. I assume it's not so visible in the back because of the black layout. But essentially, when you click on this, you will get the details for your mobile application. And there is a lot of things to do in here. You can create from getting started tutorials to creating user authentication settings to uploading applications to monitoring your applications, etc. There's a lot going on here. The only thing that is important for getting started is listed on the Get Started tab. And if you click on that, you can see here on the left that for each of the major languages, being iOS, HTML, Android, and Windows, that you can get an example application that shows you how to actually build a mobile service using that language. If you would click the C# example, the Windows example, then you will get a Windows 8.1 example solution. Now, today we are focusing on Windows 10, so in GitHub, you can find a port of this application towards Windows 10. The application is very simple. It's a to-do app in which you can add entries and you can close entries, very similar to what you would expect from a Trello or something, kind of to-do app. Right? So we're not going to download it here. Instead, we are going to start from what has been provided by Microsoft in GitHub. But in essence, it's the same application. Now, when you download the zip file, or when you forked the repository on GitHub, then you can see that there are three exercises in there. We will start with the first one, and we will start with the Begin Cloud solution. Now, we want to open this solution in Visual Studio 2015. I have already opened Visual Studio because it's slow as a dog sometimes. And we're going to open the solution from within this instance. So just to follow along in the lab, at this stage, we are at page 8, being task 2. And the purpose of this part is running a mobile services backend on our own computer. Right, that's what we are going to do. We don't have to do any coding. Microsoft has already provided the full solution for us. So the only thing that we need to do is actually go through the solution and have a look at what is in there. Question, is the screen visible enough for people? Or is it too small? It's too small. Okay. I'll go back to some other resolution then. That's my. Is it better now? Oh no. You can see it, but you're on the first row, so. People in the back, fine? Again. Ah, terug. Maar dat ging niet goed. Ah ja, het staat. Oh, in Engels. So this should be readable, right? Okay. So once we have opened the solution, the next step that we need to do is make sure that the solution actually compiles. We need to download NuGet packages before this can happen. The solution is pretty heavy on NuGet packages. It has all of the Azure SDKs that you need to build this kind of application, but it also has the mobile services SDKs in there, as well as the MVC SDK is also in there. So there are something like 20 or 30 packages that need to be downloaded. Normally, if you just click build, then it should automatically download. If not, then you can right-click on your solution and say manage NuGet packages. Then you should get a button to restore. That's the other option. So we need to wait a little bit until the packages are in. Right, my machine is done. And it has compiled, it said one build succeeded. All right, now let's have a look at what is in there. So this backend service, this is a backend for the to-do list application. So actually the only thing that this backend does is manage to-do items, right? We want to add, we want to query them, and we want to delete them. That's it. It's a basic CRUD service that manages to-do items. To define a to-do item, there is a class called to-do item in there, big surprise, and that inherits from entity data. Entity data is a base class, an abstract base class provided by the mobile services SDK that has the required properties in there. You are not required to use this base class. If you have your own, it could conflict, but you are required to have these properties on there. Now, these properties are not rocket science, just an ID and a timestamp and things like that. The properties that we added for our to-do item is very simple text that we will show, as well as a Boolean to mark whether or not this item has been completed yet or not. Right. Super simple, absolutely no rocket science. Then, in order to serve this data to the mobile client, we also create something called a controller. And it's a to-do item controller. And usually, when you work with CRUD APIs, then you map one controller to one table. And this is also done in this case. We have a specific base class called table controller of to-do item, which automatically maps all of the operations versus a mobile services table object. So you have a table in the cloud, you have an API on top of that, also in the cloud, and then you have a local to-do item list in your client. This table controller has an initialize method which sets everything up. If you wonder what the context is for, the context is an object for change tracking. So if an object needs to be inserted, updated, or deleted, it can actually figure that out for you. If you have that logic. Now we don't, this is very simple. We also have four methods. One is called get all to-do items, which will be called whenever an HTTP GET operation is performed versus this server on tables / to-do item as a URI. Okay. So if the user types this into his browser, this URI, or the mobile client invokes a GET request towards the service, then we will execute this query operator. This one will simply list everything that's in the table and return it as a JSON object. Then we have a little bit more advanced. We have getting a specific to-do item based on an ID, also a convenience method for it called lookup. Then we have the patch operation. Patch is an HTTP verb that is being used for updates, for update statements. So this will also translate to a update statement on the table. We have a post operation, which is used for inserts. So in this case, all we have to do is call the insert async operation. And then we have a delete, which maps to a delete operation on the table. So this is very simple. We map HTTP operations to table operations in a one-to-one mapping, right? It just gets all data, gets single part, gets single item, insert, update, and delete statements. So now we have one more thing. The database doesn't exist yet. We need to make sure that if this application starts, that it also creates and initially seeds the table. And that code you can find in startup.mobileapp.cs. In here you will have something called the UWP holes initializer, which inherits from create database if not exist. You can guess what this does, right? It creates a database if it doesn't exist. And it will also seed the database with an initial context, and this initial context has been filled up with two new to-do items, being first item and second item. Okay? This is no rocket science. That's basically it. Let me have a look whether or not, no, I don't need to show this. Let me close this, and let's hit F5. What we're going to do when we hit F5 is compile the solution and host it locally on a local host address. This takes a few seconds. You can see that it makes a request towards localhost port 50 and then 781. And if all is well, we will see the mobile app is up and running. That means we are now locally hosting a web service or web server that can accept requests from our mobile client. Okay. Next step is create a mobile client and make it consume the data exposed by this service. So if you're following in the lab, we are now at the next task. So we have seen this one. So we're now going to open the client project, which you can find in begin client. It's called to-do WEP workshop. I have a second Visual Studio open. You need to keep two Visual Studios open at this point because the server needs to continue to run. So allow me to open this one. Okay. So I have the client application has been opened. If Visual Studio wakes up. Now we need to do the same thing. We need to make sure that the application compiles. Before we do that, we need to restore NuGet packages. But before we can build, we need to make one little change to this solution. UWP applications are x86 only. So they don't run on x64. So you need to change the debug target here, or the run target, from any CPU to x86. Otherwise, it will refuse to compile this solution on the right. So once we have done that, we need to rebuild it. You can see that it will, again, pull in all of the NuGet package needs, which is a little less than the previous project. And if all is well, it should compile. OK, build succeeded. That means that we can go and have a look at the solution itself. At first, we go to the app xaml.cs, which is the application root. And there you will find a static object of type mobile service client. So this is the client object that can be used to actually communicate with all of the mobile services backend features, including our own API that we've just hosted. This mobile services client instance has been configured to talk to localhost on port 50,781. Validate, please, that this is the same port as was has been used to actually host your application, your web API. If that's the same thing, then it should work. Now, we also have this main page, which is nothing but a to-do list. So it's no big thing. What you can find in the code behind of the main page are several items, which all come from the Mobile Services SDK. One is called the Mobile Services Collection. This is a client-side collection of items. In this case, to-do item, which is a copy of the class that we also used at the server side. And this one will simply hold on to the local state, to the local to-do items. Not so important in this part of the demo, but if you continue to the sync part, it is important that you have a local copy of the items. And then we also have something called a mobile service table, which is a client-side proxy object for representing the service-side table object. And you can get to that proxy through this static class that we created in the app XAML.cs, so the static backend field, which is pointing to the URI of our locally hosted web service. And on that object, on that client object, we call getTable for to-do item. This will initialize everything for you to actually be able to easily consume this service. Now, when something happens in the UI, we will either need to list the data, or we need to insert the data, or delete it. All of these interactions with the backend service are handled through this client. So if you look at the insert to-do item implementation, you will see there that we use to-do table, which is the local proxy to the table, in order to insert async an operation. This will magically translate it into a REST request, send it via HTTP to that locally hosted web service. That one will unpack the request and call the client, the context for the table, and effectively push the data towards the table. Refresh to-do items is very similar, but in this case we are performing a query where the items, we are going to select the items that have not yet been completed, right? So the to-do items. And then we also have an update one, not so important. What is important is that we automatically populate the list when we navigate to or towards the page. So whenever we open the page, it will automatically make a request towards service, get the data back, and list it. So that's basically all there is to this initial demo. And we are now going to run this demo as a desktop application. So make sure that your debug target here is set to local machine, so that you can run it on your Windows 10 desktop. And then it should start. Yeah, I've run this demo before, so it complains that it wants to delete the old one. That's fine. And if all is well, then it will deploy it to my local machine. You can see it start up here. And we should see this this list, and normally I would expect the two seed items to appear, and after a while it happens. But the delay is because it had to create a database, it had to create a table in the database, and it also had to put the data into the database. And once that was done, it could query the table, return the items, and you see here we have first item and second item. We can also add an item to this, so the typical hello world example. We can now fire off this insert statement towards the service. The service puts it into the table and confirms it back. We can also complete items. That's just by marking them as completed, and they should automatically reappear. I'm going to add a few more. Because of course the point of this entire demo was that we would show that we have a connected experience once we move, for example, from desktop to phone, that we could actually take our data or take our experience along. Right? That was the point. So we're now going to run the same demo, not in a desktop application, but we are going to run it as a phone application. So we're going to switch our local machine target to a mobile emulator. I have cheated a little bit. I've turned on the mobile emulator up front. I hope you still have it running from previous demos or previous hands-on labs. Otherwise, you have to wait until it launched. So I have launched the application on the phone. It's building and deploying. And in a few seconds, we should see this very same application launch in the phone. And we can already see the application running, but we can also see on the data that is the same data as what we have entered in the desktop application. So you can see that the state from our desktop application has transferred through the cloud or through the API to this mobile application. And we can perform the same operations in here. It's No, this is QWERTY. So you see that all the same operations, the same code base as the desktop application, we just deployed it towards the phone and it all magically works. So this was the simple part of the demo. Now in the next step, we are going to put it up a notch. We're going to use a real cloud-hosted service instead of something that's running locally. And we're also going to have to authenticate towards it because not everybody should be able to just use the cloud resources. This is something that's not in the lab, but I think it's important to mention. From going from local towards cloud, you actually have to do something. This is not magical. So if you have this backend, you want to publish it towards your web application, you have to go through here, right-click on your solution or on your web project, and then you can call publish. If you have created your application in the Azure portal, then it will automatically come into the list of published targets there, and you can just push it, and you can do it straight from Visual Studio. I think that's a little bit missing piece of information in the lab. Okay, let me close this solution and go on to the second part of the lab. So on the document, we are right now on page 15, exercise 2, where we can enable authentication for the app. So you can find the starting files on exercise 2. Begin client, that's the one that we need. I'm going to open this project. Okay. Again, we need to make sure that it compiles, so we need to switch back to target x86. And we need to compile it so that it starts downloading all the NuGet packages. Okay. This is in essence the same solution as where we stopped in the previous example, with one difference. The mobile services client that we had referenced as a static member in our application used to be pointed at the local host, but now it's being pointed at this website. We're going to check first if the website is actually running, otherwise my demo will seriously fail. It's called wp-devholds.azurewebsites.net. And it should be giving me a smiley man, so that's good, it should be running. What's running here is a modified version of what we have created in the previous example. I will show you what the modifications are later in the lab. But we know that it's running. And then you see that there is a second URI here. This thing is called a gateway. And this gateway is hosted for you by the Windows Azure Mobile Services environment. So in the portal, you can, on your Azure websites environment or on your mobile services environment, there you have the option to set up authentication and authorization. And if you click there and you fill out the fields, then you will get a gateway like this as well. Then you get this URI, which you can reference. In this case, this gateway has been set up by Microsoft, and it's using Active Directory as an authentication method behind. In that Active Directory, there are 500 different users, one for each of you, and for a few more guys in Kortrijk and Brussels that can all simultaneously execute this demo. I will show you the URI where you can get your user account a little bit later during the lab. So you now know we are no longer going to connect towards our own API. I even killed that API, so it wouldn't even work. But we are going to connect to a similar API hosted in Azure somewhere by Microsoft, as well as we're going to authenticate towards this. Now at this point, we don't have any authentication logic set up. So if we would run the demo now, it would fail with an authorization required error. And let me show that. So let's start the application. Remember that when we went to the unnavigated to, we would automatically try to download the to-do items. In this case, we are also going to try to do that, but we are not allowed because we are not authenticated at this point, and the server returns to us an unauthorized exception. So we cannot at this point load our to-do items. Now let's go and implement that. So what do we need to do to authenticate towards a service? First of all, we need to go to our main page. And we will have to include some using statements. If I remember by heart, we needed system link to perform queries. And we also require system security credentials. And now I'm going to cheat because apparently it's not that one. Okay, I'm missing something. I will resolve it later. Now, the object that we need in order to get authenticated is called a mobile services user. So we will make a local variable called mobile service user, which we will put the result of our authentication in. And then we also need an authentication method. I'm just going to copy it and then explain it to you. So we have this authenticate async operation, which will try to brute force a login, a while loop, and we're going to keep attempting to log in until we actually succeed. We are going to use a provider which is called AAD. This stands for Azure Active Directory. So we need to know how we want to authenticate towards the mobile service. In order to authenticate, we need to use a method on this static client object that we created initially in the app. And we use a method called login async, and we provide the provider through which we want to authenticate, in this case, AAD. If this succeeds, then we will show a message saying you signed in. If this fails, then we will get an invalid operation exception, we show a message that you need to log in, and because of the while loop, we will get back to the beginning and try to log in again. We also obviously need to do this at a certain point in time. That's why we need a button. And if we need to, sorry, if we click this button, then we need to authenticate, or at least call this authentication method. So we have this button login click event handler, which will perform the authentication and then as well hide the button that we still have to create. And also refresh the list of to-do items. I'm also going to remove the initial invocation of refresh to-do items because it's pointless as we are not logged in anyway. That one was performed on the unnavigated tool, so let me remove this. And now all that is left is make sure stuff compiles. So we need to create the button. Button. And we put that into the XAML. Doesn't matter a lot where you put it. The lab says to put it in the stack panel. So what we see here is we create a button with the name button login, which corresponds to the variable name that we used in our backend. We have wired our login event handler, and we also make sure it's visible. If I'm not mistaken, this is the default. So now we have authentication set up. If we click the button, we will call the authenticate async method. Authenticate async method will perform login async and store the result. So let's give this a go. Run it on local machine. We should get the same application, and this time with a sign in button. Now, if we click the sign in button, it will execute the login async statement providing AAD as a string. And this has a magical effect of opening the Active Directory authentication window. Now in here we need to of course authenticate with a valid user, and each of us needs to authenticate with a different user. So we need to figure out in a simple way how we can get each one of you a new login. Now the lab has taken care of this. They have created a website which is called WP Holes Users, and if you navigate there you should get a user account and a password that you can use. Do this only once, don't start refreshing, okay, because otherwise you will get the same user as your neighbor. But whatever user you got here, I'm user 114. I'm going to log in with this one. Where is my app? There's my app. No, that's not my app. Did I kill my app? There's my app. And the password is probably also password 114 for me. No, this is not. This one is. Okay. So I'm going to log in. And after login, if it's successful, I will get a message that shows that I'm signed in. And then it will also call the refresh to-do items and should give me the list. It should give me access to the remotely hosted service, and I should get some data, unless there is no data in there. There's no data in there, I guess. Let's add hello world. Okay. So I've been able to add my hello world statement, and I've been able to remove it again. So I'm now connected to the backend, which is hosted somewhere. I have no clue where. It's hosted in the cloud. I have authenticated to it with a user account that was accepted by Microsoft because it's in their own Active Directory. Okay? You can do the same thing with Facebook accounts or Google accounts or Windows Live IDs. Okay? So you're not stuck to Active Directory if that doesn't make sense for your scenario. All right. So that's the authentication mechanism. Now, the service that we are calling in the back is not always, is not exactly the same as the service that we created earlier. So I wanted to show you what is different from the previous one. So in this scenario, all of us have been able to use a specific user in order to connect with the service. But if the service would have behaved like before, then every user would see the same data, it would see the same to-do items, and we would quickly get into conflicts with each other because our lists are overlapping. So this service has been adapted to become multi-tenant. So basically, they will add additional information to make sure that the different users have been kept apart. So I'm going to show you what that exactly means and how you add that to your own solution, because you will need this, right? You will need authentication, you will need multi-tenancy in your service in almost all scenarios. So what's different? The backend object, to-do item, next to the original fields text and complete, we now also have a field called user ID. Right? This is used in order to associate a specific to-do item with a specific user. No rocket science, I guess. They've also modified the controller to perform certain operations. Let me compile first to get the squiggles away. So if we look at this get all to-do items option, we now see that they also get the logged in user at this point. So the context, the user context, you log in on your client, but the context actually flows into your server. You log in there again and they know who you are. This is available in the base class's user property, and you can cast that to a mobile app user, and then you can get access to the user's information, including a unique identifier for the specific user. We're going to use this identifier to filter out all of the to-do items that belong to this specific user. So that's one thing. Same thing when we post an item, we of course need to associate the posted item with the currently logged in user, and we do the same thing. We cast the user property to a mobile app user. We will get the ID value from that, or that ID property, and we put it in the to-do item before we put the to-do item in the table. Right? So that's one thing, but how did we get to that user? That user doesn't magically appear there. You need to do things for that. And in order to get the user context flow from the client to the server, you need to make sure that the user has to authorize when he wants to use one of the methods on the controller. And you do that by positioning the authorize attribute on top. If you put it on top of the controller, it will automatically apply to all of the methods in there. If you just want it for one method, then you can put it on the method itself. Now this on its own also needs to be told that it has to work with the mobile services authentication mechanism. And that is something that is in the startup logic. In the startup logic, you can find this call being use mobile app authentication. And this will wire up the MVC authorize attribute with the mobile application authentication mechanism. It's all behind the scenes, but you just don't have to forget to call the initialization method that authentication by mobile app is required. Those are the only changes that you need to do in order to make it multi-tenant and to make authorization required before you can use the data. All right, I'm going to kill this project again. We have by now ended up in the lab at page, let me see, page 21. And we're going to the second part of the second lab. The downside of our current solution is that we require a user to log in into his application over and over and over again. Every time he starts the application, he needs to log in again in order to get his data. So the solution for this is to start storing the authentication result for a longer period of time. And whenever the user uses the same app again, we can reuse the old authentication token and log him in again, if applicable. Right? Could be that it's expired, we need to check for that. But that's what we're going to do in this part of the demo. So we're just going to continue. So here are the using statements, which I needed. So we need two different using statements. We need system link, just as convenience, and we also need Windows security credentials. This is a credential. In this namespace, you can find a credentials object that you can store. It's a safe way to store username and password. Right? Don't store it in plain text. Use the credentials object. And we will also have to change our authentication method. So I'm going to delete this guy and get in a new one. Again, I will just copy paste it, but I will explain it. So again, when the user clicks the sign in button, we are going to let them authenticate. I have a lot of errors. Why is that? Oh, we missed a bracket. Okay, so this authentication version is a little bit more intelligent. Again, we are going to authenticate to Active Directory. That's no difference. But you will see that we will now use a construct called a password vault. Password vault is something part of the SDK as well. And it's used by Windows 10 in order to securely store passwords or other types of credentials, but in your roaming profile. Well, that means that if you authenticate your app on this machine, but you have another machine for yourself as well, where you're logged in with your credentials, and you would log in there, that your token magically moves to the other machine as well. So roaming profile will make sure that you can switch physical device, but continue using the app as if you're logged in. Right? Remember the connected experience that we want to achieve? This will automatically propagate your credentials from previously used apps towards other machines where you are logged in. Now we can only put password credentials in there. So that's why we use the credential object. Now if we don't have a credential yet, we are going to query the vault and we're going to search for all resources from this specific provider, in this case Active Directory, and we're just going to take the first one or null if there is none yet. If we get an exception, that means there is nothing yet, but that doesn't matter, right? That just means we haven't logged in before, so we can ignore this. If we didn't, or if we have been able, sorry, to retrieve a credential from the vault, then we can reuse this credential to turn it back into a mobile user. So we can grab the username from the credential object and reconstruct our mobile service user. And we can also retrieve the password from this and use the password as the authentication token to communicate with the backend service. Now the user also needs to be set on the mobile services. This is the client. This is the client object that we are using, sorry. So this is the client which we created statically in the application scope. And we need to set the current user to this newly created user so that it can authenticate with it. Now it could be that the password that has been stored locally, which is a token, has already expired. These tokens, they do not live forever. They only go for a few hours or days. And if it has expired, we would have to log in again. So the first thing that we need to do is check to see whether or not the token has expired. And we do that by calling the remote service, the to-do table, and we just take the first item from the to-do table. If this throws an exception, being mobile service invalid operation exception, that means that the token is no longer valid, and we need to authenticate the user anyway. So we're going to remove the credential from the local vault and then go into the authentication logic. The authentication logic is exactly the same as in the previous example. We just call login async on the provider. And with the results, we will create a new password credential, store all the data in there, and then put the password credential back into the vault so that it can be stored for later usage. All right. Let's compile this guy, and hopefully it works now. What we would expect is that the first login, we would be prompted with a dialogue, and we have to specify our credentials again. Then we close the application, we restart the application, and then you would see we don't have to provide our credentials again. It's still a little bit quirky, we still have to click the sign in button, but that's just how it's set up. So let's do this on the local machine. First time we click the sign in button, it should give us the prompt that we need to log in. And there you go. I did not kill this, no. So let me log in again. Voila. So now I'm going to log in. It's going to create a credential for this and put the credential in the vault so that we can store it for later usage. Now I need to close the application and start it again. Just click here. We're going to start up the application again. And now when we click the sign in button again, we will not be prompted anymore with the request to enter the credentials. We should automatically be logged in by means of that credential which is stored in the password vault. Et voila, we are logged in. We should be able to refresh or at least add something. Voila. So you see now that it remembers the credentials from the last login and that we can reuse it on this machine. If I had a second machine and I would go there, it would also work because the password vault uses the Windows roaming profile and automatically transfers the authentication token from between your machines after a few minutes. All right. So we have now reached the end of exercise 2. We have 4 minutes left, but I'm not going to try to put exercise 3 in there. But let me give you a little explanation of what you need to do in exercise 3. In exercise 3, you will be creating the sync capabilities. In order to use offline sync, you first need to install something on your machine called SQLite. Yeah. You can find SQLite in Visual Studio in your extensions and updates section. And if you then go search the Visual Studio Gallery, which is found underneath online and Visual Studio Gallery, if you type there SQLite with single L, then you should find various versions of this little database that you can run just about anywhere. And one that you need to choose is SQLite for the Universal App Platform. That's the one that is used for Windows 10 applications. Once you have installed this thing, you need to download it, you need to install it, then you need to close your Visual Studio or restart it again before that you can actually use it. And besides installing SQLite itself, you also need to install an additional NuGet package, and then you can start coding. Okay, so this is quite a lengthy involved exercise for which you should take about half an hour to actually complete it. Okay? But that's it. We have 2 minutes left in case you have any questions. Anyone? Any questions? No? Okay, you have one.
The password vault?
Yes.
Yeah. very low. And
yeah.
It's not app specific, it's AI specific. So you will never know when you store something in there.
Yeah.
But you will be able to, which is really annoying.
Which is annoying, yeah. I will repeat the remark basically. It's a remark on password vault. So password vault has a limited, very limited capacity. You cannot store a lot of data in there. But the amount of data that you can put in there is machine specific. So it does not relate to you, or it does not relate to your app. It relates to the machine that you're hosted on. So if this is a frequently used machine, let's say a library or something, then you might get into trouble that you can no longer use password vault because it has been filled up. Okay? Anything else? No? Then I thank you for your attention and enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay.